Blog Talk Radio.
Snatch their face off. You know what I mean?
Well,
everybody thinks this, all the hashtag crap is so cool. And, like, somebody put a thing out with, it was a 911 call, and the woman had called in on 911. It connected her to the local law enforcement. That dispatcher told her that she had to dial #77 to get state police. When she said #, you mean the hashtag? I'm like, oh, Jesus, God. Now we've completely lost our minds. Hashtag SP.
We were talking about that at work last week about how nobody can communicate without hashtags anymore.
Like, and I'm afraid if I'm in the middle of a, you know, face-to-face verbal conversation and someone says hashtag this, that, or the other, I'm probably just going to reach out and snatch their tonsils out.
I've had that happen.
I actually was standing in line at, I don't remember if I was at the grocery, where the hell was it? It doesn't matter. The two women ahead of me are talking, and the one starts kind of snickering and goes, LOL, and I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Sorry, don't use that word, ladies and gentlemen, that's bad. And children, if you're listening in, don't use that word, that's bad. I forgot we're not unleashed tonight. But, yeah, come on, you're not typing a text. You're standing there looking at them in the face. We still have English, ladies and gentlemen. Learn it.
And I hate people that say OMG.
Oh, yeah.
That actually physically say OMG.
That's probably another one that I would like to introduce to some of my paramedic friends. You know, here, let me give cause for you to meet some of my friends. Yes, they run ambulance. A couple of them are advanced life support. You will need them shortly. Oh, gee, I'm sorry. Is that your Adam's apple? I'm clutching firmly in my grip. Oh, makes it hard to breathe, doesn't it? OMG, sucks to be you. As you can tell, I'm a little wired tonight. I discovered something.
Caffeine?
I think, I think I mentioned it the other night that I finally broke down and joined the Keurig crowd. At first I kept thinking, well, what a pain in the ass, you know. I'd just as soon make a whole pot of coffee instead of having, you know, change that little stupid K-cup every single time. Well, I discovered that in the long run, I'm actually saving money with it, because all I do is take one little scoop thing, put it in the little my K-cup thing holder, whatever. But I really should not have coffee that convenient to me 24/7.
No, and it only takes a couple seconds to brew, which is that's a miracle to me.
Yeah, well, I literally kicked the rooster this morning to get the son of a bitch to crow, just so I would have a reason not to feel so totally asinine that I'm still sitting up bug-eyed. It's like, okay, I probably had too much coffee. I probably should have been to sleep last night. Why didn't I go to sleep last night? I can't understand this. I mean, I had coffee. Let's see, when was the last cup of coffee? Three? Yeah, somewhere around 3 o'clock this morning. Why in the hell was I drinking coffee at 3 o'clock? Oh, and that's right, because I didn't want to drink Coke because it would just wire me up. Well, I really like coffee. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not decaf. I need to buy decaf.
On your Keurig that you got, is it the hard line in, and or do you actually pour the water in and then put
I've got to pour the water in. It's got the little carafe on the side of it to hold the water.
How long did it take to brew doing it that way?
No time at all. Once it's on and ready. Now, if I have to turn it on, it takes it about 30 seconds to heat the portion of water, and then it runs it. So within a minute, I can have a fresh cup of coffee, which, you know, that's really kind of dangerous for me.
Yeah.
I've discovered that, well, I've always known I have an addiction to coffee. It's not good when you drink to coffee a day, and then, you know, while I'm out running from job to job, I carry a 24-ounce travel cup with me, and I was stopping at, you know, Sheets or Wawa, and I'm filling that twice a day. Yeah. At this point in my life, I've probably drank enough coffee that explains why my ankles are brown from all the ground settling. Yeah. Not good. But
I have to say, at this time, thank you for not blowing my phone up because you're bored and everybody else is sleeping.
Yeah, well, I've discovered it's not a really good conversation with you at 3 a.m. because I prefer more of a response than... Matt, wake up. Matt. Well, this has been enlightening. Thank you.
Hey, how many times have we had the conversations, or how long of a stretch did we go to where either of us actually remembered saying bye? It was either you'd pass the hell out or I would. Or
yeah, I think we went 3 months prior to the first time that we actually said goodbye at the end of the phone conversation. We said good morning a lot more often than we said goodbye. That's, you know, and that was simply because the damned alarm would go off in the background. But at any rate, let's move on to tonight's show and see if we can get this moving. So I will allow you the opportunity to introduce our guest. Normally I'm the one that does it. This time I'll let you do it.
Well, unfortunately, the thing that I wrote down isn't pulling up. You can probably grab it. Go ahead with it.
Oh, well, fine. I will do this. Tonight we have Tara Perfetti-Streets. She is one, funny as hell. I've spoken with her half a dozen times on the phone. She is ordained to do house blessings, cleansings. Hell, it's probably just easier if I shut up and let her start this. So I'm going to bring her in live now because otherwise I'll be here stumbling for a little while. Oh, I hear the automobile in the background. As long as I don't hear what I usually hear, which is beep, beep, beep. Get out of the way, asshole.
I will contain my road rage for your show. I will maintain not cursing out Virginia drivers while we're on the radio. I am actually in the process of driving home. I've had an exceedingly busy day, but I am so glad that you guys had me on. I am doing this hands-free, people, so, you know, it's all safe. Hello. I took some notes on your introduction there, and basically the gist of what I've got here is you guys have this amazing bromance going on. I'm very impressed. I like that, you know, you have the late night talks together. Dennis is completely addicted to the Keurig system. I got your back. When mine broke, it was replaced the same day. And I'm going to have an extra special status for the both of you that include the terms, oh, my God, and numerous hashtags, because I hear you just love them.
I don't mind them in a typed status or something like that, but when you're doing it face-to-face, actually using verbalization, you know, which is a skill that us humans have possessed for thousands of years.
I just had to play catch-up there, and yeah. Hello, you guys.
Matt's been trying to play catch-up on the vocalization aspect of humanity for years.
Yeah,
I am a woman of many hats. I do a lot of spiritual work and counseling for clients, both in the paranormal and non-paranormal field. I do provide house blessings, pet blessings, people blessings. Basically, if you need me for any kind of spiritual matter, I'm kind of there for you. That is my job. It is what I do. I love my paranormal investigating as well. I've been doing it for almost 17 years. February will be 17 years. I've been doing a lot of work. And I work for numerous different companies, which are not all associated with each other. So I'm very, very blessed and very, very lucky in life to have these opportunities to get myself out there and be able to do what I have a drive and a passion for doing.
Yeah, definitely. Ooh. Especially when you're loaded up with work, it's hard to be able to just say, okay, yes, I can be at your house this time. Oh, no, client called that this is the thing that pays me. I don't charge anything. So this could screw up a whole account or whatever it's run. It is difficult to balance, and I give you kudos on that for sure.
Well, thank you. It definitely took some getting used to, and slowly but surely I am learning the power of the word, no, I cannot do this right now. That was a very hard lesson learned in life.
I definitely can understand that one. As a contractor for a living, you know, I have caught myself on numerous occasions overbooking, and then I look at my schedule and go, oh, shit, not again. Yeah, so
again.
Let's see. Can I divide myself in two? No, it hasn't worked yet. Can I do time travel? No, I haven't. I mean, I found a wormhole, but it didn't help me get through time.
not the right kind there, buddy.
Yeah. I haven't figured out how to be in two places at once. So hopefully I can get that one mastered, and then I got this whole thing covered. We're good.
I will pay for classes. When you figure that one out and you have that one mastered, I'm your first student. I will sign up right away.
Awesome.
Yeah. The power of the word no. It comes in very, very handy. It is hard to balance work, and I have three beautiful children that I am charged with raising and bringing up into the world. God bless society everywhere. And then the spiritual work that I do, the counseling work that I do, the paranormal work that I do, it can be a little overwhelming, but learning that it's okay to allow somebody else to handle something, pass a case off to a team that has the capabilities and the time of handling it, give it to another spiritual leader that can deal with it right now. I'm just saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm not available. People understand more than we think they will.
Yeah, it is a good thing if you can find a network of people local or, you know, within a couple hours or whatever you trust in all different realms of it, that if there is something that comes up and you can't do it, they contact you because you're respected and they respect you and your reputation and all that, that you would put your stamp of approval on somebody else, and then that makes them feel calm and lets you allow you to do what you can do if you can't do it.
It's a very valid point, and unfortunately I've seen that backfire on a lot of people, handing it over to a team or a person that they didn't know very well. And it does, you're right, it does come back on the person handing it over. I'm blessed. I know a lot of teams across the country that are fully well-equipped and capable and educated of, you know, being able to handle these things should I have to hand them over to them. And more recently, with life being a little chaotic, I've had to do that. I'm very blessed to know people like that. And you guys are kind of included in that. You know, you're all right outside of your addictions and whatnot. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, I'm all good as long as the client's got a Keurig, man. We can go in and rock an investigation. That's not a problem.
New requirement for CPR. I'm sorry. You don't have a Keurig in your house. I'm not going to be able to help you. Perhaps I can find somebody less coffee addicted to meet your needs.
No, you wouldn't even do that. You would figure out a way to buy a second Keurig, ship the wires 12 volted into your truck, and have it in the back, and you'd have a portable Keurig.
I can go a step better than that, brother. I've already got the power inverter in the truck, so I can, you know, just plug right
y'all
in.
Y'all are already flattening this out. You see how you are? So clients everywhere, you know, make note. Keurigs are a good thing.
Yes. And if by chance you happen to have a possessed, definitely make sure to call me. I will come take it off your hands.
Dennis, we'll put it in his Keurig, haunted Keurig museum. He has no other items
adventures.
In there.
I see a blog spinning off of this, The Adventures of Dennis and His Haunted Keurig.
Yes. Well, I mean, of course, the first thing I would have to do would be get in touch with Tara and have her bless it and do a cleansing ritual on it.
Come out and bless your Keurig machine for you.
Would you?
I am not coming out to bless your Keurig machine.
And here I thought you loved me.
I'm sorry,
Tara.
Buddy.
And here I thought you loved me. Damn.
Hold on. I will say this though, Tara. You can't include me in that whole thing. I have one 16-ounce cup of coffee in the morning that I stop at the gas station and pick up. I don't have the refillable mug. We have a Keurig at work that if I don't stop and get coffee in the morning, I will use the Keurig at work. And it's one cup of coffee, and then I usually just sit and drink bottled water for the rest of the day. Not even regular bottled water, because the stuff that's in the plastic actually...
You're a special
really kind
of suck-up, aren't you?
I'm just not a Colombian degenerate like you.
Now play nice, boys.
Wow.
I don't mean anything bad about Colombian people. I was referring to coffee, everybody. So just to clarify that, that was that directed towards the country or the people of Colombia. They're a great
yes,
people.
All angry messages should be directed to CPR Matt. You can find him on Facebook.
And Twitter. And
she beat me to it.
I know.
But so as far as the blessing and cleansing of houses, and I'm assuming you'll do like restaurants or offices or whatever the client calls and wants. Give me an idea on kind of the protocol on doing something like that.
Well, what I do, I've actually been taught to do. I did not look up an article on the internet. I did not go park my butt in a library and read a book. I actually paid for classes that I'm still in, spiritual mentoring and training classes. So the ritual that I perform was taught to me by a woman that has been doing this her whole life. What I do really depends on the client, to be honest with you. I've learned various different religions and traditions, including all the way up to no religion. Ironically enough, and I always find it ironic, I've worked with atheists. I'm not sure how you're an atheist and you have a paranormal occurrence, but it does happen, and I do work with them. So, you know, my blessings and things that I do for a client will specifically be designed to fit that client. I'm not going to go and perform a Christian ritual in a Wiccan house or vice versa.
Okay.
I'm going to backtrack since before you took the classes. What was the calling that you took, or that you got, or the idea that you got, or whatever, that you wanted to pursue this and actually take the time to learn how to do it and do it?
Paranormal-wise, it's something that has been with me my entire life. But I was raised in a very, very Roman Catholic family. So it was very, very bad, and you didn't talk about that stuff. I chose, after having my son and more experiences directly after his birth, that I was an adult now, and I want to know. I have questions, I want answers, and nobody's going to answer them for me, so I need to figure it out myself. It kind of grew from there, where I really started to understand the psychological impact this can have on people. So I kind of got into the counseling a little bit. In addition to that, there was counseling for numerous different things, domestic violence, child abuse, just mental illness, whatever it was. And that was something that I felt I had to do. It's something within me. I need to be able to help people with that. So I educated myself on that. Doing the paranormal investigations, I got to a point where somebody actually looked at me and said to me, and this is numerous years ago, a good 5-6 years ago, and said, well, I get that you can come in and you can do an investigation. I get that you can hand me evidence or tell me there's nothing here, but if I do have something here, how are you going to help me? And I couldn't answer that question. I didn't know how to help them. And they had a valid point. What am I going to do? How do I help them eliminate this problem, learn to deal? I mean, I can give you counseling. I can tell you how to get along with your ghost, but is that really helping? And that kind of got me started in everything that I do. It's just been a drive and a passion to learn as much as I can, and I'll never learn it all. I still have a lot of learning to do, but also to meet people where they're at. I can't push my beliefs on anyone. I don't expect anybody to push their beliefs on me. So how do I help a client that doesn't have the same beliefs as me? So that was another road that you had to go down. And just little by little, things popping up like that where it's like, okay, well, you know what? If I'm going to help, I'm really going to get in there, and I'm really going to help, and I'm going to make damn sure well I know what I'm doing before I do it. I'm not going to cause them any harm. I'm not going to cause myself any harm. I've got a house to go home to with kids and a cat. And so what do I do? So I started training.
Yeah, that's something that I'm actually dealing with personally locally here is I was contacted by a private, and I made it completely understood that the only thing that I can do is document. I can't get anything out. I can't, you know, that's not what I do. But I do have people around that I do trust that can do that if need be.
Right.
And I don't know about or how much that you've used this or how much, and I'm sure you do partially involuntarily and partially take your own notes when you're doing talking to a client for the first time, second time, third time, however many times before you actually physically go in there. And you kind of do a little bit of a psychoanalysis on them to see if, you know, hey, maybe this is something that is a change of medication and it does cause a minor hallucination, or something like that before. And then you take it case by case where you treat the client first and then treat the location and then you get what you get from there and then decide your course of action.
I have my own process that works for me, and I'm not saying that it's right or wrong or that anybody else should do it my way. Please don't take me the wrong way. But with me and what works for me is I will have initial contact with the client over the phone. I'm not going into anybody's house that I ain't never spoken to. I'm just not doing it. I'm a pretty tiny girl, so, you know. Then I will physically meet with them. And, you know, in all honesty, I have a questionnaire. I have, and I expect that my questions be answered. If I'm going to help you, you got to be willing to help yourself. And my questionnaire is not an easy one. I'll warn them beforehand, look, you know, I have these questions. You don't have to answer them if you don't want to. That's your right. You're the client. I'm here to help you. But I also need to make sure that I'm protecting myself and any investigators that I bring into your home. The questions can be a bit difficult for clients to answer sometimes, but they will ask, you know, are you on any illegal drugs? Are you having issues with alcohol? Do you have any conditions that require you to take a lot of medication? Or do you have, you know, any mental illness diagnoses? I don't ask because I feel like I need to be involved in everybody's private personal life. I ask for protection, both for the client and for myself and my team. If we're going into a house of a patient that is dealing with a severe mental illness, my investigators can be just as harmful to that person and their overall well-being as they can be to us, and we're not the appropriate people to help them. I am not a doctor. Yeah. I cannot help them with things like that. So, I mean, that's kind of how I deal with it. If I feel that it is a severe mental illness, I will make sure that I maintain contact with this client to get them help that will really help them, because in that aspect, a paranormal investigator is not going to help them. If they have alcohol problems or drug problems, I've stood beside them and help them with those issues, but I do not bring a team into homes like that. We're not doing them any service at that point, and to endanger ourselves in that aspect, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, and that's the exact same thing of what I was talking about is, and for anybody who's listening and is like taking, I've never asked about this. You know what, if myself, I have medical background training. Tara does also. Dennis does also. That's kind of how we'll operate. But if you don't go that route. So if you know somebody who does, like, myself, my degree is in psychology, more focused on abnormal. Samantha, who's with us, is a pharmacologist. So that's why we kind of get into it a little bit more, and then we make sure, hey, and you're absolutely right, is it a safe environment? Or is it going to be something that's, you know, possibly threatening to the living people who are in the house? And because you don't know. I mean, you really don't know that person if you don't have the conversation. If you get the weird vibe, then, yeah, change it up a little bit. But, and not saying that, you know, I'm not a doctor myself either, but I have had more training than somebody who hasn't had any. So I guess that's an easy way to put it, but, yeah, if you like the idea, you like the concept, then get in touch with somebody who can work with somebody and talk with them if you sense something weird, a local professional or whatever. But, yeah, no, that's a rough thing in this field.
It is, and in some aspects it can be a little scary. We have a lot of new people to the field, which is fantastic. I mean, if you think about it, it really is. First and foremost, it's now an openly accepted topic where years ago, you know, you had family and friends considering putting you in the crazy house. So it's a good thing. But the downside is the people that are not taking the time to train themselves. Education is power, and everything you do, education is power. And if you find yourself in a situation where you're just jumping on board because here's your first case and it's at somebody's house and let's go and let's do this, and you get over there and you find out that, you know, you're dealing with a severely emotionally disturbed person, you've put yourself in a situation that you might not be capable of handling. And it's not just that you're not capable of handling it, but you can be just as dangerous to that person. It happens. I don't really have a overall answer on how to prevent that outside of flipping back to education. Ask the hard questions. You have a right to know if you're going to be in their house, just like they have a right to ask you anything they want to ask of you. You know what? I'm coming in your house. Ask me what you need to ask me. Ask for references. I can give you references. Whatever, you know, you want to know. I'm in your house.
Ooh, you know what we should start? We should start a paranormal Angie's list.
That's not the first time I've heard that. Somebody else was actually just talking about that the other day. He goes by Chip. He's on my Facebook account, and he was in some kind of tirade saying that there needed to be one. It made me laugh, quite frankly, because it was a tirade, and I don't know, I just find them silly. But, I mean, I can see the potential of it being a really good thing, but I can also see the potential of people abusing the system to kind of get back at one another if they're involved in the drama game.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that was something that, and Matt Tara also knows Howard, so
yeah,
I'm sure you've
Howard.
Seen it on his posts. But that was something that, you know, he was on our program a few weeks back, and that was one of the things that we talked about. But yeah, you're definitely right. You know, both of you are making great points. I have to be as comfortable with the client as they have to be comfortable with me.
Is that your Keurig?
No, that is actually a jet flying into Oceania. Welcome to Virginia Beach, Virginia.
No,
they go
asking,
all the way up till 2:00 in the morning.
I thought Dennis was making cappuccino or something.
That's the Navy jet.
Yeah, that would probably be at least 1/32nd ahead of the other, 15-second ahead of the other. They usually launch out of there 2 at a time.
They're so loud.
Oh yeah, but it's awesome if you're down at like 18th Street, 20th Street, somewhere down around there, you know, hanging at the beach, and you get to watch them take off. I love that.
if you're new to the area and, not, you know, you've never really seen them before, it's kind of cool when you live here every day and you have to learn how to pause your conversations or go to sleep, you know, at midnight with jets flying overboard. It can be a little obnoxious.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, kind of like Matt, unless you have to talk to him every day. It can be a little annoying.
Until 3 o'clock in the morning when you're both snoring on the phone. I did find that very sweet, by the way. Turned out it was sweet.
Everybody says that.
Yes, we have lulled each other to sleep many a night.
The beautiful bromance you got going on there.
Yeah.
I apologize for our guest here.
No, I met Dennis in Virginia at an event, like well over a year ago now, and we were down there and kind of, you know, we started talking about paranormal and all that stuff, and ended up like hitting it off as really good friends, and then it turned into, I kind of drug him into the whole radio thing, but it turned into where we'd have these, you know, long conversations about theories and ideas and all that stuff, and even without like previous discussion about that and time to think about it, pretty much had the same answers. So hence how Dennis became CPR Dennis is because I'm a stickler when it comes to who I directly associate with and is going to represent any sort of name that I create or anything. So he fit the bill where he was like, man, you know, the team I'm with is, you know, all about PR and not working so much and not doing anything. So I'm like, dude, if you want to start your own, I did not think of starting Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers to have one in Richmond, Virginia. Because that just doesn't make any sense. So, but the fact that I did trust him enough to say, dude, you want, start your team, or, you know, you can start a team, you can use and go under an umbrella like, you know, CPR or whatever, that's perfectly fine. I have absolutely no problem with backing you on any decision that you make.
I think so, it's more about the quality of the team than it is about the name, though.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But for why when people are like, well, CPR East, and I always get the joke around here, well, what does he investigate Lake Michigan? I'm like, oh, yeah, he's all over shipwrecks and diving and...
Totally out there in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I had to go pull him out, you know, just a few months ago. Look, you know, you've been out a little too long, got to bring you back in, and...
I was only a little bit pruney. It wasn't that bad. But, yeah, it's pretty much.
If I'm not mistaken, you did represent very well CPR at Paracon at the Exchange.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
I had absolutely, like, that's what I said, is I had absolutely no doubt in my mind that he was going to go out there and do something stupid, well, without me, because when I'm there, stupid stuff happens when Dennis and I are together. But
no shit. No,
as far...
uh-huh. There's 1,000 miles between us. We don't get to get together very often and make people wonder what the hell is wrong with these people.
Well, I will leave that one alone and play nice for the sake of radio. But, yeah, CPR was very well represented out at Paracon at the Exchange. We had a lot of teams out there. And when you bring yourself out into a public situation like that, I mean, it is what it is. Whether you like it or not, the people around you are judging you. They're watching you. They're seeing what you're doing. They're watching how you're talking. They're hearing your ideas. And they're judging you. CPR did exceedingly well out at Paracon. There was a lot of good times out there, many laughs, a little bit of craziness. we did learn that when you're in a small town environment, it takes an ambulance 20 minutes to arrive.
I didn't hear about that story.
Hmm? Were you there? Oh, you did? Yeah. When PearCon first started, unfortunately, somebody had fallen ill, and we were in such a small area, the closest county had to send their ambulance out, and we learned that it takes 20 minutes. Very good information to have.
So everybody should invest in Life Alert, then. And hopefully press it before you're actually going to need anything.
It was a beautiful event. There's a lot of amazing teams and amazing people out there. CPR was very well represented.
And the Exchange Hotel, you know, I can't even tell you how many times I've raved about that place on air simply because it's so damn cool. And Angel is, she's named
She right. is amazing. Her name is very, very suited for her.
Yeah, she's,
I am very, very protective of my Angel and my Exchange Hotel. They are very, very close to my heart. So,
and Chief Clay also is an absolute riot to talk to. So that's definitely one of the places that I've got to get back to here as soon as I can.
She's still booking.
Speaking of angels and just extremely sweet people, and like my local angel is Ursula Bielski. I love that woman to death. I nothing in the world I wouldn't do for her. She if she's not doing any of her ghost tours or anything like that, she's always out on investigations with me and the team. And you want to talk about one of the best historians I've ever come across in my life? That would be Ursula.
That's awesome.
But the one thing, and if you guys go on her page and look today, she posted about doing a couple trips throughout the summertime, the wintertime and the springtime of checking out even Puerto Rico to Gettysburg to all that. And she's looking for opinions on the one that she listed and also for suggestions of other places. So might possibly, depending on suggestion and what that block of time is, that might be a thing where she'd be coming through. And I'm trying to figure out which ones to go with her. It's always easier when you have a big bus.
Well,
I don't own a big bus. She owns four.
So. Yeah, well. But, yeah, I'm definitely going to throw the Exchange Hotel at her and see if I can get her in touch with Angel and, you know, let them work it out. Some of the stories that are there and the history on that location is just phenomenal.
But, yeah, Angel knows that place from the frontwards to the backwards. You'll see me out there occasionally. I used to be out there a lot more than I am now. I had a lot more time on my hands back then. I don't have that much time on my hands anymore. I will help Angel do the historic tours, the ghost walks, the investigations as I'm able to. But she is definitely the queen of multitasking. How that woman pulls off half of what she pulls off amazes me. It's an amazing building. It is the 15th now. They just recently did an article on it. 15th in America, 15th most haunted place in America. The Exchange Hotel made the list there. I posted the article not too long ago. I think it was actually yesterday or the day before. They are amazing about working with people that are coming from out of state. Angel will bend over backwards to make sure she can get her in during the time frame that she's looking to be here. She's just awesome like that.
Yeah,
and we also have a couple of other areas here that, you know, while they're in this stretch of our country, it would be phenomenal to get them into, you know, Henricus Park. Some of the battlefields around here, I think, are right up there in equivalence with Gettysburg, only they're not quite as inundated with, you know, the ghost hunters and all that.
So, and this is open for anybody. I'm going to run through the 10 real quick for you and see if that would be really, really cool on if all of our schedules in a perfect world would be able to work this out. But Puerto Rico with Josh Warren, Helltown, Ohio, Lilydale, New York, Burlington, Wisconsin, Roswell, New Mexico, Key West, the Sally House, the Axe Murder House, Gettysburg, and Baltimore.
I actually lived in Burlington, Wisconsin, and I have family there. That's ironic.
I was actually just up in Fond du Lac this past weekend.
Yeah, I saw. Did you have a good time?
It's always fun when I go up there. There's, and Dennis knows that. And Dennis, is she on the board listening?
Briefly, she is. She actually just texted me and told me that she's not sure how long she's going to be tuned in. So, Naomi, stand by. Don't hang up yet, darling.
Okay,
Matt.
Tara, this is one of my dear, dear friends who's up in that area. Hi, Naomi. Dennis and I always have to... Go, Dennis. Your turn.
Hi, Naomi. Hi, kids.
Oh, dear.
Hello.
That was so much enthusiasm behind it.
Throw me under the bus like that, jackass. Give me a heads up next time.
But she, if you're from Burlington, I don't know if you know where Eden is just outside of Fond du Lac.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a question? Was that a huh?
Yes,
or
I do.
A...
Yes,
oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I do.
Yeah, that's where Naomi's from.
Very cool.
That whole area, the whole Fox Cities area, has just a ton of locations and a ton of stuff. I'm actually jealous because they have more locations than Chicago area does, which is depressing for me because it's a long drive for me to get get up there. But yeah, no, it's one of my favorite places up there is a private location, and it's. Has the most activity of any place that I've ever been.
Very, very cool.
So, little Wisconsin tie, little Wisconsin love. So.
I love living in Wisconsin. I will not deny that. I will occasionally refer to myself as a displaced cheesehead, especially when I'm sporting my Packers gear. Yeah. And I have a very funny accent. I kind of sound like I'm from the South, but I kind of sound like I'm from the Midwest. And no one can ever really tell. Wisconsin's an amazing place, but this time of year, they are all on their own. I love my Virginia weather in comparative to Wisconsin weather. Not going to lie.
I would agree with you.
I understand that. You know, CPR Graham and I today went to Henricus Park, and I was strolling around out there in a T-shirt and just a light long sleeve shirt covering that. I guarantee nobody in Wisconsin was without a heavy coat today.
Or Chicago.
And they do have some really amazing, amazing, amazing homes and facilities and buildings and properties in Wisconsin that are highly active, tons of history, which... When, you know, you really start getting into the history of Wisconsin is amazing within itself. But this time of year, you're going to freeze your tail off doing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, this location I'm talking about was actually established before Wisconsin was a state. So, yeah, that was... Oh, by the way, thanks for all the OMGs and LOLs and hashtags, Tara.
I was just looking out for you guys, you know, supporting the CPR team, and you're quite welcome.
And no, And no, a hashtag won't kill you. I was going to write that, but...
Were you serious in your story? You literally heard a woman refer to the pound sign as a hashtag.
I did.
You wow.
Standing in line at a cash. It was that was the LOL. The hashtag was when it was one of the little videos or something that I watched. But yeah, she actually asked the local police dispatcher. By pound sign, you mean that hashtag thing? Like, oh, for God's sakes. We're so screwed as a country.
I will not go so far as to say that, but that is exceedingly disheartening that an adult woman would not know that it is a pound sign.
Yeah.
I'm at a little loss of words for that one.
Even that pound, a number sign, like you ever, like if you're watching football and somebody has a big foam finger on, do you call it hashtag one? No, it's number one.
Yeah.
No, now they probably call it a hashtag one.
Yeah.
No, hashtag one.
Oh, Lord.
No, actually, if I hear you in the middle of the crowd hollering, we are hashtag one, I am probably going to smack you in the back of the head and say, you are hashtag one.
Remind me the next time we do see each other in person that I shall start talking in hashtags. Just for you.
I just want to drop my Keurig on your feet. Let's feel good.
Tara, all right, since you're so close and you probably know people, do me a favor, if I ever put in the, or pick up the red phone to call you, and I hear a stadium chanting hashtag one, please go down to the local military facility and have them send jets and blow that place up.
If only it were so easy. I will not have people blown up.
Yes, I know.
For lack
of sarcasm.
But I can honestly tell you, I think the worst I've ever heard is somebody saying LOL instead of laugh out loud, which kind of made me look and go, all right, you need to flip off the internet for a little while, sweetheart. It took me back. I was a little surprised. I wasn't sure how to respond to it, but I think that's the worst I've ever heard.
If you're physically talking to somebody and somebody says LOL instead of just laughing, that's bad.
Well, that's what I was saying. I was in line at the grocery behind two women, and one of them did that. One made some humorous comment, and the other just looked at her and went, LOL. But what? You realize you just said that out loud. You need to, at this point in time, notify FIOS or whoever your carrier is and lose all internet service for 6 months until you get your bearings back, because you've lost it.
You guys don't have Cox out there? Cox Internet?
That
would
who
be
is that
you,
to?
You, Matt.
COS.
Because she's right down the road from me. We don't.
Oh.
Yeah. But what was the name of the company?
It's COX. It sounds bad. It's not. It's literally a company.
I wasn't setting it up for like a slam or anything. I just was honestly asking.
let's make that clear. It's a very large cable internet service provider around here. Most everybody in Virginia actually carries it.
We're Comcast, which is Charter, AT&T, Dish, DirecTV. That's pretty much most of ours around here, except for a lot of the apartment complexes do have smaller cable companies that they work with. But I've never heard of. I mean, I've heard of Cox, but I've never heard of Cox Cable.
Yeah, no. I think. I think just on the other side of Williamsburg from Richmond, I think is pretty much the cutoff line where Verizon kind of takes over. Well, Verizon and Comcast. Cox is a regional supplier. But yeah, now that you mention it, I do remember when my daughter and son-in-law were down in that neck of the woods. They had it. But
like you're so far,
the reason I had asked is you said to contact your service provider. Cox Cable actually offers like a parenting control thing. Well, they'll put a timer on your internet, and then they'll shut your internet off after your timer.
Yeah,
true
the
story.
Trouble is you can't do that with adults.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a shame. I know many that really could benefit from that.
I'm sure nobody really cares all that much about cable, but
no.
The conversation did flow well, but people are probably like, are they going to start talking about anything paranormal anymore?
No.
Question I have is, Tara, what was the just complete downright most gut-busting hysterical experience you ever had on an investigation or on a cleansing or anything like that?
Huh. You know what? That's a really good question, because now I have to think about it. Thank you for putting me on the spot, by the way.
No, we can revisit that. I'm not going to silence until you answer.
You know, in all honesty, it's never, ever been out on a spiritual call. It has been out on investigations. And I think the most hysterical time I've ever had is when I'd gone out to St. Albans in Radford, Virginia. It was a public investigation, and numerous different teams kind of combined together to investigate the sanatorium. Come about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, because we were locked in till about 6 or 7, everybody kind of started to get a little bit stupid, tired and bored a little, I guess, being silly. You're in a massive facility that was once a sanatorium, which is funny within itself, making bad jokes about being locked in a sanatorium. No power. You have to go outside to use porta potty to go to the bathroom. Just watching people be stupid in that aspect is probably the most entertaining time that I've ever had. And when you're in a place like that where you don't need to be serious, it's kind of neat to sit back and have a little bit of fun with it, I suppose. We did, anyways. A very many jokes were cracked about all the investigators being in a sanatorium.
See, when we went up to Parafest, I was hanging out with Rebecca and them from Trans-Allegheny. And after I had spoken with her for an hour or better, I finally looked at her and I went, you know, I find it perfectly believable that you spend the majority of your life in a sanatorium. I am, however, amazed at the sight of the bars that you are on. And she cracked up. She went, yeah. I kind of understand that.
Rebecca is a very, very neat people. She makes me laugh a lot.
Oh, funny thing is I'm actually wearing the shirt that she gave me at Parafest. That's irony for you. I don't often wear this shirt. It was just I grabbed it off the top of the clean thing and threw it on, and, yeah. So I'm wearing the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum shirt from Parafest.
Speaking of, sanatoriums.
Yeah. Her and Michelle are just, I love both of them. They're awesome, just stand up, cool, easy to talk to, just down to earth. But, just want to give a shout out to Michelle and Rebecca. So, anyway, speaking of sanatoriums, ADD moment.
Are you done?
Back on track there, buddy? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now can we move on with something more entertaining than watching you just run rampant with the train?
Oh, wait. Yeah, that screeching metal I hear it. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I do have a question for you, Sarah. One of the things that's on your profile says that you are an intuitive medium. For those that don't know, could you give a definition on that? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
It does say that.
I do believe so.
Oh, I didn't think that was on there. I am not, I'm not the kind of person that really places labels on myself, per se. I certainly do not have the talents of very many other people in this field, like Angel May and Tracy Ray, and just overall gifted, amazing, bright woman. Dawn Short's another one. Massive respect for these ladies. They have talents well beyond my capabilities. I am capable at times of sensing things, and then I will say those things out loud, and later I will find out that they've been validated. I tend to be more accurate with the living than the deceased. So I think they actually call that an empath. There are times where I can see and hear things that anybody in the immediate vicinity of me is kind of giving me a look like, Tara, there's nothing going on there. And later, too, those have been validated for me, either by picture or EVP or somebody else on site hearing or seeing the same thing. The most recent thing that had happened within that aspect is I was up in Northern Virginia in Shenandoah Valley investigating a facility, and I had this feeling, I guess. I don't know how to explain it appropriately. I just felt like I needed to walk down this one hallway, and it didn't really make sense at that point in time, but I don't question myself. I follow my natural instinct. So without a flashlight, Tara goes walking down the dark hallway, and of course everybody starts following because Tara's walking down a dark hallway without a flashlight. And I stopped at a room. And when I stopped at the room, it is one of the only times in many recent years I can honestly tell you I was scared. I jumped up. I said a few choice words, a few of them a bit colorful, and I ran in the opposite direction of the room I had just walked into. I physically saw somebody get up and start to run at me, and it was validated later because there was a camera crew on site that actually picked up on their videotape somebody getting up and running, even though all of the investigators were standing right there. So it couldn't have been any of them. But things like that will happen to me. I'll feel like I'm drawn to a certain area, and when I go to that area, there's usually something that will happen.
So if you, well, and another part of that question was, can you define intuitive? Now, well, obviously I know what the medium portion of it is. I understand the intuitive portion as well. But for those that don't know, and by the way, I just went and looked at your profile. I don't know where the hell I saw that.
Yeah,
you,
it's
I
not on my
profile.
It's nothing I advertise about myself.
So
I was kind
of like,
my
head going, where the hell did I get that?
Intuitive. I mean, there's obviously a textbook definition for it if you really want to be technical, but I do understand what you're asking me. To me, that's exactly like what I had just told you. You're following your natural intuition. You're not really questioning yourself, and you're going with it. Rather, that is something that you hear. Like a few of the psychics that I know that are able to perform readings successfully will hear or sense something and spit it out of their mouth, and somebody within their area that information is relevant to. They followed their intuition. Me going into the room or walking down the hallway where the creepy dude wanted to scare me, that was following my intuition. So intuitive, intuition, follow it, stick to it. It's usually right.
Precisely. Now, as far as the medium aspect, let me ask you this.
I do not classify myself as a medium, and that's kind of why I was taken back going, I really don't think that's on there.
I don't know where in the hell I saw it, but I...
It wasn't me.
I'm
trying
to find
it. I do think it might be on Angel's, but it's not on mine.
I don't really
classify myself in any of those aspects. I see people that have very God-given abilities that I can honestly tell you I do not have. I have a psychic that works on my team that can sit in her home and not be told anything about a client or the case, and she will have written down in detail what this client's house looks like down to the color of the house and whether it's made out of brick or vinyl siding, and she is accurate every single time. I cannot do that.
Well, Dennis is good at that on occasion. 95% of the time, I should actually say. No, he's nailed as a whole 95% of everything that I brought to him. And Dennis, I don't tell you shit, do I?
No, and that's, you know,
I have a major, major respect for people that are legitimate. Unfortunately, we do have some not so legitimate ones in our field, but the ones that are legitimate, I have a massive amount of respect for. My mentor, actually, when I was down in Florida, going through a baptism and part of my training, what I was able to witness her do just absolutely blew me away. There was no explanation for it, and how she did it is well beyond any comprehension that I have. It absolutely is a paranormal thing by definition. It's a beautiful thing, and people that have that God-given gift certainly get massive amounts of respect from me. I can sense things. I can at times hear things, and I'm not a crazy person. I really do hear voices, although I would never walk into a hospital and tell them that. I can see things occasionally. It doesn't happen all the time. I cannot call it. I cannot ask for it. It just happens. So the people around me are usually the people I will absolutely give that credit to.
Yeah, that's... And when I first started realizing that, well, it just, like, shit would just come to me at random. Like, what the hell? I'd like start getting information fed to me. And then Matt was telling me about basically it was an urban legend up around his neck of the woods. And then I just started spouting off all this shit about it. And, I mean, everything. I described where he parked, what he drove, what the place looked like, what the house looked like, the surroundings, the girl, the name of the girl, and she turned out to be a murder victim. Just all this information.
So can you do remote viewing?
That was pretty much what I did right up until I got punched in the nose.
That wasn't on the one reading. That was after we started going with it. That was like the third or fourth.
Yeah.
Is when it was the what happened to her, and then you just went with it, and I was just, I wasn't even verbally verifying information. I was just, okay, and that's all I was saying the whole time. And as he would keep going, I was writing shit down, and I'm like, just noting the points that he was hitting on. I have a 167-page police report of this woman's murder. So, and the investigation and all that stuff. And I'm able to verify everything that he was saying. Like,
it's
actual
very,
legal
very impressive to see. It is. It's very impressive to see. In all honesty, I asked you if you were doing remote viewing. In all of my time that I have been doing this, I have come across one person in all of these years, and he does not go by his real name on Facebook for protection of his family, and he has an amazingly beautiful family. If you want the truth, He goes by Russell on Facebook, so we can use his name because it's not actually his real name. If you want the truth, I did not believe him at all. And so, you know, I thought I would be slick and put him to the test and go, okay, well, if you are capable of doing this, you should be able to do it at any time, right? So I just moved. You don't know my address. You have no idea where I'm at. You have no idea what kind of place I live in. I want you to read me. And that's what I told him. And he was able to not only come back to me at that point in time and tell me that I was in a townhome, not a house, but he was able to describe in great detail, including the colors, the pictures on my wall. And I will honestly tell you, it scared the shit out of me. To know that people are capable of doing that, it just kind of scared me at that point. It's truly an amazing thing to witness. If you are capable of doing it, Dennis, you need to share it with the world. It's an amazing thing.
I'm still learning it. I've done it a few times. I mentioned earlier that my daughter and son-in-law were down in the Virginia Beach area. He was working down there at the Naval Shipyard. Navy transferred them to Connecticut. They were up there probably 3-4 weeks, I guess. I get a phone call from my daughter, and she's going, Dad, I got, like, one of son-in-law's boatmates has rented a house here, and they're having some weird shit going on. Can you kind of give us an idea? And I start chuckling, and I didn't know he was in the background, the boatmate that actually lived in the house. And I started chuckling, and she's like, what's funny? And I said, well, who got bitch slapped? What? And I hear him in the background going, what the hell did he say? And I went, who got bitch slapped in the living room? Well, it turns out that he had a roommate that was walking across the living room and just got literally bitch slapped right in the middle of the living room. And at this point, I've got his attention. I proceeded to describe his house to him, describe the layout to him, describe what he would find in this little, like they had built onto the house. And I saw this little doorway in the wall. I told him, you need to reach back into that doorway immediately to the left. You're going to find a piece of paper back there that is very significant to this individual. Well, it turned out that there was exactly where I said, everything as I had described it. I described the basement to him, the hand-laid stone wall that's down there, the what they call the storm cellar doors. And it just absolutely blew his mind. About a month later, I get to go up there finally. We get to the door, and I just kind of look upstairs to this one-bedroom window. I mean, I had described to him the event that had happened that nobody had even told me about, that my daughter didn't even know about. As soon as we walk in, he's like, well, you know, let me show you. Never mind. You show me around. Let's see what you know. And as I'm standing there, I start telling him, you know, if I go this way, there's this and this and this, and there, you go this way. He's like, okay. And then I turned and looked at him and I went, so did you quit screwing with his bathroom yet? Because, you know, he's going to keep jerking on your coat or shirt, whatever, every time you go in there to screw with his windows and all. And he's like, okay, now you're scaring me. I went, now? Now I'm scaring you? Just, I don't know. But I, you know, from nearly 500 miles away, I described his house to him to a T. And events that had transpired in the house just within the past few weeks. So, yeah. But it's something that I'm still working on. I can't at will call up the ability to get answers.
Right. So it's kind of like, you know, I had a reading done at the very first Paracon at the Exchange, and it was by one of the most beautiful souls I've ever met in my entire life. I'm truly honored I got to meet this woman. Her name is Tracy Ray. And she looked at me at that point, and she had explained to me that I need to open myself back up. And I knew exactly what she meant when she had said it. And I literally, I broke down crying. And it was very moving. She knew something about me that the rest of the world does not know. And that blew me away. I'm wondering if something like the remote viewing, if it's an ability that you have, I would imagine that it has to be natural born. I can't rightly see how it couldn't be. But again, you know, I'm no major scientist. I haven't won a Nobel Prize on anything. So is that something that if you train and you focus on, you know, and really devote your time to it, is that something that you would be, like with people with abilities, when they shut themselves down, they have to open themselves back up, and you have to kind of retrain yourself and refocus. Is that kind of the same thing? Is it something you can do eventually if you put your time into it?
Well, and I'm going to do the same thing that you just did. Tracy Ray, actually, she was, well, her and David were the reason that I went to not this year's Paracon, but last year's Paracon up at the exchange.
Yeah, the first one.
And it was just to meet them. After I stood there for a couple hours just hanging out and, you know, shooting the breeze with them, I came home. It was on a Sunday that I went up. I shoot pool on Sunday nights. I came home in time to grab my pool cues, grab my wife, drive across town, go shoot pool. I still had on my paranormal investigator ball cap. The bartender said, "So, paranormal investigator, can you read people?" "No, it's not what I do." She said, "Oh, well, you know, if you get anything on me, then, you know, by all means, let me know." Well, as I was getting ready to leave, I paid my tab. She asked me again, you know, "So, you get anything on me?" And I rattled off this list of information about her that there was no way in hell I could have even found. I mean, I gave her information that even she wasn't 100% sure of. Well, since I haven't mentioned the location or her name, she had a drunken one-night stand one night with a dude whose name started with an R, and all she could remember was it started with an R. And I told her, "I'm getting it. It's either Ronaldo or Rolando. It's one of those two. But that would be you're one of the baby daddies." And her jaw is hanging up. And well, as I left, I mean, I asked her when I get done, "So how did I do?" And she's like, "You're like spot on 100%. I have no idea where the hell you got all that." Well, as I'm walking across the parking lot, of course, my wife's looking at me like I've lost my absolutely last marble. And she's like, "What the hell was that?" And I'm shaking. I'm like, "I have no clue what the hell just happened." We got in the truck, and I called Tracy Ray, and I'm like, "Tracy, this is Dennis. I have to ask you something." And she starts chuckling, and she goes, "It's about a bartender, isn't it?" "What?" And I hear David in the background bust up laughing. I'm like, "What the hell is so funny?" And David's going, "He figured it out, didn't he? What the hell are you two talking about?" Well, they had already sensed it about me, I guess. And they knew that I could do this. They were just waiting on me to figure it out again. The way they explained it to me was, it's kind of like a muscle that you have to practice and keep working on, and it gets stronger and stronger and better and better. So as far as, you know, if you shut yourself off, can you go back and do it again? You know, you have to keep training to be able to do it, is my understanding. So just every now and again, I will just randomly, you know, only with close friends. I won't do it with, you know, absolute strangers yet. Well, no, I take that back. I have. Damn. If I get answers strong enough thrown at me, then I'll go ahead and start giving up the information that's given to me. But there's always that apprehension in the back of my head. What if this is the wrong person? What if this is the wrong information? You know, but one of the things that, Tracy told me was don't doubt yourself. Just go with what you're being told. You know, it may not be relevant right now, but just trust in what you're being told.
As I agree with
far
that.
As far as can you get better at it, I don't know. I mean, there's times that I can shake somebody's hand on the street. You know, hey, Dennis, this is my buddy so-and-so, and I'll shake a hand. I'll start getting just pictures and images shot to me, and there's other times I don't get anything. So I don't know. At some point in time, I certainly hope that I would be able to do things like that. I would love to assist law enforcement with, you know, missing children or cold cases or something like that. I mean, my father was law enforcement. You know, it's been kind of a, well, I think I missed my calling in life. I think I should have been law enforcement also, but I always found myself on the wrong end of the handcuffs. So I don't know. I'm not real sure what it would take to sharpen the skills. You know, I only have
something to look into
anyway.
Yeah. My mentor, when I talked to her and I had told her about this reading and I had told her about some of my past and things I was capable of doing in my past that I would probably not tell too many people because I'm afraid they'll look at me like I've lost my mind. You know, I asked her the same question, and I don't know that advice applies to everybody, but she told me, she said, the first thing you do, you take out a notebook and a pen. She's like, don't use your computer. Don't use your phone. Get out a pen and a paper. And make sure it's a pen and not a pencil. Didn't make sense to me. So anything that you naturally feel, anything that you dream, anything that comes to you out of nowhere, you have no idea where it came from, write it down and write it down in ink so that you can't go back and erase it. And she said, eventually what's going to happen is you're going to start to read through all of this, and slowly but surely, everything is going to piece together, and that's going to be your natural abilities coming through. And then the more you do it, it's like training yourself. The more you'll start to trust yourself, because here it is written in pen, and I knew this before so-and-so said this, and the more validation you have, the more you start to trust yourself. But in writing it down, too, you don't lose it, because as humans, we naturally lose things as soon as they come out of our mouth. You talk about this conversation that we're having tomorrow, half of what we said is probably not going to be remembered. But when you write it down, you remember it.
Right.
So, you know, something to look into.
Yeah, it's definitely been intriguing. You know, and what back to what started this conversation as far as, you know, Matt and his urban legend and everything else, you know, all the information that I was able to give him on that one, you know, he was able to look at the police report and validate everything. Well, I obviously didn't even know about the case, and I certainly hadn't seen the police report. But, you know, it kind of left me scratching my head going, what the hell am I actually able to do? And like I said, my wife thought I had lost. You know, she thought I'd flip my final marble. So she came home one day with just a little post-it note and stuck this name. There was a name written on the post-it note. She put it on the table in front of me. And she goes, can you tell me about this person? And I just started rattling off all this shit that I just kept getting. And finally I looked at her and I went, all right, who the hell did I just talk to? And she's just sitting there looking at me like I grew a penis out of my forehead. And I'm like, so who the hell did I just talk to? She's like, you have no idea who that is? I mean, I described him to a T, had never met this man. Well, it turns out it was her boss's father that had passed away not very long before, like less than a year, I believe, in Pennsylvania. I had never met him. And I think it was at that point in time that she actually realized, you know, maybe he hasn't flipped his final marble. Maybe there is something to it, and he's not just flipping crazy. Which, I mean, maybe I am flipping crazy, but I'm good with that. Especially if the information is coming up that late. But, you know, it was another one of those moments where I just kind of sat back and looked towards the heavens and went, okay, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? You know, why do I have this? And, you know, what good can I do with it? So, I don't know. It's definitely intriguing. You know, the place that Matt was talking about there in Wisconsin, you asked me about remote viewing. I was able to describe the place to him there, describe the outbuildings on the property. I could describe the interior of the house, the layout of the house. You know, it was definitely kind of cool and had never seen a picture of it. Didn't even know where he was talking about. So, I don't know. It's something that, you know, along with
just
all
happens.
Your training and everything, you know, just like you and all your training, you know, it's something that intrigues me, and I'm going to step forward and see what the hell I can actually do with it.
Very cool.
I do know one thing, though, and I had to reach out to a couple of different people to figure out how to shut them the hell up. I'm not kidding. I mean, it was like...
Look, I'm trying to sleep. Can you just shut up for, like, you know, 6 hours? Just shut up.
Exactly. You know, it's... And I had to find out how to shut them up. I stupidly left myself open when I told you I went to Connecticut to see my daughter and son-in-law. And we were headed to the casino. And I'm chilling in the back seat of the car, you know, it's pitch black outside. We passed by this place, and I'm like, what the hell did we just drive by? I can't see anything outside the car. I'm like, are we near a cemetery or something? And both of them kind of look back at me, and they're like, yeah, why? All right, well, there's a god-awful lot of screaming going on, like agony, misery. I don't know why, but, well, it's mostly gone now. We had driven past Norwich Insane Asylum that had been closed down, boarded up for years. I had no flipping clue where we were at, but we had just driven past Norwich Insane Asylum, and there's a cemetery right beside it that was part of, at one time, the asylum. I had no clue, but I had left myself open, and all of a sudden I sounded like I was in the middle of a rave. Like, what in the hell is going on? So it does have its drawbacks. There's not a lot of quiet time. But now here's the cool thing, though. Now, I live, and I'm sure you'll be quite familiar with this, Seven Pines Battlefield, Cold Harbor and Gaines Mill. If you draw a line almost directly between those three battlefields, I'm almost dead center. Gaines Mill and Seven Pines are almost, well, they're directly side by side on the north end of me, and on the south end is Seven Pines. So I'm dead center.
Yep.
My wife's grandmother actually had this house when my wife was a child. So she spent a good part of her childhood in this house, growing up in this house and everything else. They always heard footsteps. Her grandma always said that, I don't mind that, that's just Charlie. Well, you know, kids kind of blew it off, but, you know, whatever. Well, I was sitting out here one night, and I'm just kind of bored, and I hear noises in the house, and I'm like, all right, look, I know you're here, just talk to me. Were you in the Civil War? Were you a soldier? And I started getting information. No, I just start writing it down. Well, the next day, I jump on the internet, and I start tracking it down. And sure enough, the information that I got fit with historically accurate details. I still don't understand why this young man is in my home, but cool with him. He's pretty chill. But it was kind of neat that I was able to validate exactly what information he had given me.
So then you prefer to coexist with the spirits?
Yeah, as long as they're not assholes.
Fair enough.
I mean even as, you know, what was it, Matt? 3-4 weeks ago, we had Bishop Reiki on with us. And one of the things that she said was, you know, I'm a firm believer that if they were an asshole in life, they're probably an asshole in death.
That's exactly
well,
true.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Well,
I think I said that when I spoke at Paracon, didn't I?
I'm not sure if I was there for any of the speeches or not.
Yeah, I did. I was just giving you a hard time. I absolutely agree with that. I think there are obviously certain occasions where perhaps you are enlightened in death, but, you know, if you're still hanging around, I'm pretty sure you are carrying the same temperament in the afterlife that you did in the living life.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I don't mind coexisting with them as long as they're not assholes. When they start, you know, breaking my Keurig or my coffee cup so I can't utilize the Keurig, then we have an issue.
Or they're my friends.
Nice.
But, so what
and,
is your...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You're the guest.
Oh, well, I mean, I was just going to ask you, are you guys, in what you do, in the investigating, especially out in and private clients' homes, are you guys the kind that will normally attempt to cleanse or protect or bless or do anything within your own home to make sure things are not following you or stopping in for a visit?
Ooh. Are you picking up on something right now?
Well, I mean, in all honesty, I have asked every investigator I have ever met that same question, and 9 times out of 10, I will have somebody just look at me and go, oh, my God, I really should do that.
No, not that. Just Dennis knows my dickhead attachment that I had.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's gone now. I got it out. It was around for about a week, and I really don't recommend having an attachment as cool as you think it is, or some people may think it is. But when my animals started getting sick with no diagnosis from the vet. Yeah, that's when all bets were off, and I got that shit out real fast.
Yeah, I was kind of being funny. No, I'm not reading you guys right now. You're safe. It is something that I've just often asked, and almost every single time I have asked somebody that does this, I get the same exact response. No, you know, I guess I never really thought about it. These are also the same people, well, when you go out to an investigation, do you try in whatever way you do it, because everybody's way is different, to protect yourself before you go in, or do you do it when you come out, or, you know, do you let them know, hey, you're not hitching a ride with me, and you would be shocked at how many people are not even doing that.
No, frankly, I wouldn't be shocked. But to answer your question, I do, on my way in, I make just a little quick, simple prayer. And on my way out, the last thing that I always do, and I've had clients look at me like I've just absolutely lost my mind. You know, I'm walking out of their home. I've said goodbye to them. As soon as I have any information, I'll get back with you. You know, we'll set up a time that we can share whatever we find, close out that, and then I will make one last statement as I look around the house. You are not allowed to follow me. This is where you belong. You are not allowed to follow me away from here. And I don't know if it does any valid good, but it gives me a little peace of mind.
Well, I mean, rather it does good or not. That's ultimately what we're all kind of seeking, is that peace of mind. It's a very intriguing question to ask people. It really is. I catch a lot of looks and very long-winded conversations, usually people trying to defend themselves. It's quite entertaining. There's another question I ask almost every paranormal investigator that I meet, and I don't usually give anybody my take on the matter until I hear theirs. But I'll ask both of you. Everybody kind of gets in an uproar when you start talking about a Ouija board. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Yeah. A lot of people are not fans of them, obviously. It has gotten quite the name for itself. And I asked this question at Paracon, and you know, I did not have anybody at Paracon successfully be able to answer my question. Actually, I haven't met anybody that could yet. But I asked them, when we go into a place, whether it's a public place or not, just as an investigator, you realize that you're provoking a spirit in any situation. You're either going to provoke them in a negative way and try to cause drama and F you and be ignorant, or even in a polite and compassionate way, because you're provoking a response from that spirit. No matter how you look at it, you're provoking a spirit, because you're trying to get that response from them. I'm provoking you right now for a response to my question.
Sure.
With that being said, I'm looking for anybody that can tell me what the difference is in sitting down with a Ouija board and a candle in comparative to a voice recorder and a flashlight.
There is no difference.
I have my hand raised. Like, instantly, I had my hand raised.
I had
Professor
a feeling
Dennis,
where the question was going, so.
Professor Dennis?
Sir, go ahead.
I want to say my piece, and then you can say your piece about it. All right.
Go ahead.
The difference is the origin of the board. If you got it from somebody who is a Wiccan, more on the dark side, it depends on the origin of the object that you're trying to use. I mean, if it has negative connotation, if you have cancel out Ouija board for the moment, if you have a dagger that was participating in satanic ritual, you don't know what it has attached to it. If you just go to Target on your way there and buy a Parker Brothers, probably not an issue. But if it's something from the 1800s that was used in witchcraft or anything like that, that you don't know, well, nobody knows if there is an attachment to it, but if it's more of a possibility.
But that being said, couldn't that hold true to any item that you have within your home or use that you use on a regular basis that perhaps is historic?
But I don't use my Sony that I bought in the package or my H4N that I bought in the package to go to a location.
And provoke spirits. I got you.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there is a different level, and this could be a whole other two-hour conversation about it, but as far as what the Ouija board is, and when you look into the history of the Ouija board and even the designs and crests and everything that are on it, it actually goes back to the 1600s as far as what those images were used for and gypsies and all that other crap too. But if you stop at Target and pick one up and you use it for entertainment purpose only, probably not a big deal. But if you're a collector and happen to come across one that has, and you have history on it, that it's been used in this, that, and the other thing, you store it under your bed, yeah, there might be a little negative thing that you could possibly bring in. Other than that, it's, I mean, they are pretty innocent. I used one in the past when I was a kid that was bought brand new out of the box. Never an issue. But
Dennis?
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. I don't know if he's brewing coffee or what, but...
Dennis.
No.
I've gotten a lot of interesting feedback from asking that question, and I asked that question for a very specific reason. In all honesty, we have so many people that are out and they're doing things, and they don't really comprehend the depth of what they're doing because they saw a show on TV because their friend is doing it and they thought it was cool. Maybe, you know, the 19-year-old that lives across the street in the townhome complex thought it might be something cool to do for Halloween, and that's what we see, and we see a lot of it. And I'm not the only investigator that sees it. Anybody that's out in the field, they see it. And they don't comprehend when I told you, anytime you speak to spirits, you're provoking them. You're provoking them for a response. You're provoking them for an answer, to make a noise, to let you know you're there. You're provoking them.
And that's on it. And Dennis, sorry to cut you off, but that's as far as EVPs or spirit box or whatever tools we use.
Comparative to the Ouija board, you're feeling as though it just really depends on where the object itself has been.
Well, that has some credibility, or not credibility, that has some theory behind it. And I can't say fact or bunk. I mean, really nobody can. But it's how you approach line of questioning. Is it provoking? Yes, it for sure is provoking. It's acknowledgement of a realm, and it doesn't matter what sort of medium or media that you use, it is still provoking a response. And it's acknowledgement of them that they may have not have experienced in the past. So to answer your question, yes, you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter if it's a Ouija board or a spirit box or a digital recorder or a K2 meter or an EMF detector or whatever. You're still provoking a response. So, yes, you are 100% absolutely right.
Now, what I was going to say for my response was simply, any of the above, you're doing the same exact thing. Without knowledge or without protection or without any CYA involved, how many of you would go out, stick a sign in your front yard that says, please come in, and leave your front door stand wide open? Not a damn one of you would do something so foolish. But when you break out the Ouija board, when you break out the recorders, when you do anything to request that spirit join you, you're doing the same exact thing that I just described by putting the sign out and leaving the door wide open. You have no clue what the hell is coming through. So, as far as
I try to watch my words and how I direct things very carefully, and there's a very funny story that's attached to that by somebody very well known in the paranormal field. Let's just say Tara learned her lesson the hard way, as I do many lessons in life. I think that a new investigator in the field is a beautiful thing, especially when they're taking the time to learn and educate themselves, rather it's the history of the land and the home and the building and just getting their hands in there and doing it and putting that work and that time into it. It's an amazing thing to see. It really is. people that come into this field that really want to know, what am I doing? How am I doing this? The people that ask the questions constantly, just constantly asking questions, it is so amazing. And I love it. I do. What I don't care for on a personal level is what we like to call the thrill seekers. Well, I'm really only out here so that it can kind of maybe spook me a little bit. And there's a part of me that wants to believe in the spirit world, so maybe I'm doing it for that. And then there's another part of me that says, yeah, this is all BS, and I'm kind of trying to prove that. And it really is for the thrill and the ride. If you're out in a public location and you've paid your $50 to walk through the doors of that building, by all means, go and do what you got to do. But when you bring it into a client's home, then it's a problem. And you ask questions like that without really giving your own opinion on them. I actually wrote an article on the Ouija board that includes the history of it. It's on my Facebook. At the end of it, I made a bad joke and said Ouija boards are not manufactured in the depths of hell and sold to children everywhere. It can have power. It can have the power that the user is giving to it, but so can everything else.
True.
Yeah, I had a comment made that I had to just kind of do a double check. The comment that I heard was, well, how can a Ouija board be bad? It's made by the same people that made chutes and ladders. Well, my first thought was, are you really that damn ignorant? And my second thought was, maybe I should define that question. Just because it's made by the same people that made chutes and ladders, in chutes and ladders, you're not asking for another realm to open up to you and communicate with you. You're asking that you don't have to, climb back up a ladder or, fall back two spaces.
You are a father, I see.
Yes. But it just kind of left me scratching my head going, what the hell do you mean? How can it be bad? It's made by the same people that make chutes and ladders. I don't give a rat's ass. If M&M's also produced arsenic and rat poisoning, does that mean arsenic and rat poisoning aren't bad because they're made by the same people that made M&M's? No.
I don't believe that they are inherently evil. That is my own personal belief, and as a human being, I am well entitled to that. I have used them. I do not use them at clients' homes. I will use them upon request if the client asks me to. But again, I'm capable of performing blessings and protections over myself, and I have an entire house of sisters that can pray for me. And we do believe in God. So, but it's a very intriguing question. I asked it out at Paracon, and I ask everybody that I meet within this field to tell me what the difference between them is. I've gotten a broad range of answers all the way from, I don't know, that's a great question, I've never thought about it, to people trying to defend either a voice recorder or a Ouija board, whatever their preference is. I've gotten a lot of really good information back from it, but I still have not yet successfully had anybody explain a drastic night and day black and white difference between the two of them. If you're sitting down with a Ouija board and a candle and y'all all around a table and you're asking a spirit a question and the plank moves, you've gotten your response. You provoke the spirit, you got your response. If you're sitting around a table and all of you have your little voice recorders on and your flashlights on, well, your flashlights are substituting the candle and your voice recorders are substituting the Ouija board. However, I do believe there is some truth in what Matt said. I do believe that items can carry energy with them. And if there's a negative energy in the board, I do believe you can get it back. So, that's my opinion on the matter. However, it's just a really thought-provoking question. Thought I'd ask you.
Well, I definitely do appreciate the minor kudos for what I said. That makes me happy, but I'm kidding. No, but I mean, truthfully, it's, you know, there wouldn't be, and this is for the general public, and this is just a generality across the board. There wouldn't be people like John Zaffis and Brian Kano and Jason Gates and the rest of their crew and Chris, and I'm not going to go through everybody because we don't have all that much time. They wouldn't have based a show on it if there wasn't some truth of, like, John Zaffis being the godfather of paranormal and having his, you know, museum in his basement that he's been doing for decades, not just during the run of the show. Of object attachment, manipulation, all that kind of stuff, where that's a minor, and I will stress this, minor basis on what I was saying as far as, like, the Ouija board goes. But, yeah, I mean, if you go, and Tara, as far as my knowledge and my ears on this planet, there is no concrete answer, yay or nay, to prove or disprove what your question is. And that's one thing to where,
is no concrete answer. There's no concrete answer when it comes to the paranormal. You can never look a client in the face and promise them that you could rid their home of spirits no more than you can look them in the face and tell them beyond a shadow of a doubt they're being haunted by a specific person with a specific name. We won't know those answers until we're on that side.
Thank you. I mean, that's been...
I'm an expert at this, so come on, really?
Did
you go to Paranormal University?
Yes,
yeah.
PU, which spells
P-U.
Like shit. It's PU.
The reason I said that, Matt and I absolutely have a strong disliking, and if you ever want to see the two of us get fired up, let someone tell us that they're an expert at anything in this field. And
yeah, I just tend to avoid those kind of conversations with people. I giggle and walk away. I'm not one much for drama or being baited into arguments. I give my opinion, and my opinion could very well be wrong. I'm a human being. It happens. I am a Tara at that, and I am wrong a lot. I have no issues admitting that I'm wrong. I am not a perfect person, but I do not believe that there are any experts. No.
Well,
yeah, that's
it came down to
drove us nuts.
Yeah, no, it came down to even a lot of what the media does, or not media, like production companies, when you watch shows and stuff like that of experts, like at Parafest when Dennis and I were hanging out with the Constantinos, and you always saw on Ghost Adventures that they were EVP experts, they were this expert, they were that expert. And now it's even changed on TV because Doug and Debbie got so pissed off of being called experts that, no, if you're a specialist in something, that's what you focus on. You focus on EVPs. You focus on that stuff. That's fine. You can be a specialist, but there's not a single person, including people I've talked to from NASA, that say they're an expert on anything. Michio Kaku, who is... He doesn't call himself an expert on anything.
I think that there's always an opportunity in life to learn. My dad actually told me when I was growing up many times, he said, there's something you can learn from every day you're alive, and the day you stop learning is the day you need to start worrying. In other words, meaning it's the day you die. I didn't understand it when I was 5 and 6 years old. However, as I got older and continued to hear it, it made sense to me. I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert. I can simply tell you what I've experienced and what I personally believe, whether I'm right or wrong.
Yeah, even Einstein won't claim himself as an expert. And never, well, that sounded bad, like he was still with us. But no, like he would never say he knew everything about anything. It's he knew nothing about something. Then he knew a little more about something.
That's a good way to put it.
And no, I mean, and that's actually true. That's the quote was off on his direct quote, but no, he saw himself as a normal person, and everybody puts him on a pedestal of having all this knowledge. And did he come up with great things? Yeah. Have there been more things that developed from the 1930s and 40s and previous? Yeah, of course, obviously. Up until the 50s also, but yeah, no, I mean, you think of these great minds and they don't see themselves as what they're not. They see themselves as what they are and are actually humbled in a lot of ways that people see them in that light. But I guarantee you what you see on TV is not going to produce that.
Now, one thing that I do want to stress, since we're, you know, we had talked about basically opening the line of communication with spirit, something that I think needs to be pointed out is most people that don't have knowledge in this stand the most risk because they don't understand how to open and / close a line of communication. On the Ouija board, there's a specific way that you are to open. There's a specific way that you are to close. There's a reason for that. And if you actually read the SB7, the directions that come with the SB7, they even recommend an open and close ceremony or statement the same way that the Ouija board is supposed to be done. So, and the bad part is, so many people just open the damn thing up, pull it out of the box, don't bother to read it. There's four simple letters, RTFD. Read the friggin' directions. It'll cover your ass a lot. Much like, say, a prayer of protection or, you know, some way to protect yourself from taking something home with you.
Yeah, but a lot of the problem with those things aren't even the Ouija board and the SB7 or anything that you buy on eBay. Also says everywhere on it when you get it and in the listing for
entertainment purposes only.
Exactly, so nothing is taken seriously about it. Now, saying that is the vessel of what's causing all this stuff.
So,
hey, Tara, real quick, we got a minute and a half at this point. Any plugs that you want to throw out, feel free.
Hey, I just want to thank you guys for having me on. It was an honor to be a part of the show. I had a lot of fun with you guys. I am on Facebook. You guys can find me there. I'm both on Matt and Dennis's account. If anybody needs to for any reason, I'm not sure why they would, or if you want to, but I'm just happy y'all had me on.
We couldn't pass the opportunity.
Yeah,
and we definitely look forward to getting you back.
Karma.
Well, I don't mean that, smart Alex.
I was just kidding. You knew I was sarcastic before you had me on.
Oh, I did not. I never detected that. Damn it.
Yeah.
This gift just isn't getting it for me. But it's always great to have people on here that are A, like-minded, B, educated, and C, don't take themselves too damn seriously. And they can have fun, have a good, intelligent conversation.
Well, thank you.
Let me, So that's the, I definitely enjoyed having you on. Now, we're in archive, so we still have another hour that we can talk if you care to, or if you just want to bug out at this point, you're more than welcome to. But I do want to know one question if you do decide to bug out. Before you do, what is your opinion on the layman slash novice grabbing either a recorder, a Ouija board, anything, and going out and trying to talk to the spirit? What is your opinion?
I actually do training for people new to the paranormal field. It was something I had started being asked to do about a year ago, and I will tell you the same thing I tell everybody when I meet them for the very first time. In anything that you're doing in life, there requires some kind of education for it. Education is the most powerful thing in the entire world, and 90% of the time, if not more often, you can find it for free. If you're going to do it, you need to educate yourself on it. Understand how your voice recorder works. Understand how a Ouija board works, and that it is intended to be a toy for the most part. Understand what you're doing and what you're asking for before you do it. So.
Yeah.
Very well put.
Well, the other thing that I do not and will not advocate or will not recommend for anybody out there, because as every single episode of Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, or reruns of Paranormal State, or any of the other shows that have been on, don't say, oh, this is cool, I'm actually into this, let's go into somebody's house. If you've never done one, don't fucking go into a private residence if somebody's contacting you for help just because you thought it was cool to start a team.
I do agree with that, and I believe I did say that a bit earlier. There are thousands, literally, with the help of TV and these shows on TV, and I know a lot of these amazing people that have been on the TV, and they truly are amazing, and they will tell you the same thing. There are thousands of public places and venues that you can go to, and you can go in there, and as long as you're abiding by their rules, have at it. Don't ever take it into a private client's house if you truly do not understand what you are doing. Because you're not only hurting them, but you could be hurting yourself.
And I hate to sound like a broken dead record, but I've had to clean up so many messes around here, it's not even funny. Like, to the point that people were on their last, and this isn't a gloating thing, this is just an honest-to-God thing. I've had to go into so many places, and yes, I was in, or currently in the middle of responding to your message, and I will finish after I'm done with this statement, but unless there's a short answer that you have. But anyway, no, like, people go in, they don't know what the hell they're doing, and, you know, they hear a gruff voice on an EVP or something like that, and it's automatically a demon, and they go through, like, four or five different people saying, hey, we need help, before they get to me or anybody else that I work with. It's like, just because you pay the $125 on Google or whatever to be featured, like, It doesn't mean you know what the fuck you're doing in any means. And I'm not saying that I know 100% what I'm doing, but I have a shit ton more experience than somebody who just, you know, watched Ghost Adventures on Friday and Saturday they decided to start a team and put a thing up and it was featured for the free day that you get on Google and they get contacted. Like, no, it's disheartening in a lot of ways that it's just let's go get scared. I was talking to a woman who was a private resident who was losing her mind. They had three different groups of high school kids that she let come into their house, and one was that a mistake on her part? For sure. But these kids had never done anything before and thought that they just walk around and, you know, scream out, oh, well, I know you're a demon and come attack me. And, like, no. Really? No. That's horrible.
Well, I have a hard time even fathoming the idea that I would. Well, if I had a new investigator on my team that went in and did anything similar to that, I'm afraid I would make a Flintstone exit out of the house with his body.
I had a mental image of the Flintstone exit. Sorry.
It would be the nap of his shirt, the belt loops or waist of his pants chucking him out a wall. You dumb son of a bitch, you don't go in and ask for something that you really don't know what you're going to get. It cracks me up. Well, I don't mean it cracks me up. I find it hard to fathom. But it cracks me up in the idea that somebody would be asinine enough to do something like that. You have no idea what you're asking for. And it always reminds me of the old statement, be careful what you ask for, you just might get it.
I can only tell you that it has gotten a little bit better on the last couple of cases I've gone out to. But prior to going to Paracon this year, I was very upset by the time I had gotten out there. And my original lecture that I was due to give, I did not give. I decided instead to take a different route and to express how important it was that we be very careful as investigators when we decide to step into a private client's house. I covered things from liability. Is the house falling down? Is there mold? Is there fire hazards? Are we talking about somebody that should be on an episode of Hoarders? I've seen it. It happens. To protecting the clients, rather it's what we discussed earlier, mental illness, drug problem, alcoholic. How are you going to help them? You're not. I too many times have been out to somebody's home with them in tears, frustrated, angry, upset, and really disturbed because we had people go into their house that did not know what they're doing, and the problem became worse after those people left and went home to their quiet, happy little homes and slept. But these clients were kind of left out in the cold. It is a very sensitive subject with me. I am very careful when I speak on it publicly because I do not ever intend to insult anybody directly. But it is a problem. And people need to take it seriously when they decide to take this step in their investigations. If you are not willing to educate yourself on basic things, how your equipment works is key. Basic psychology is even something good to educate yourself on because, let's face it, you're going to run into it. The history that goes hand in hand with the area you're walking into, if you cannot put the time and the effort into taking on that education, you do not need to be walking into somebody's house.
Yeah, it doesn't take a whole lot to do a little bit of background research on a location, on an area. I mean, if the house is only 5 years old and they're claiming shit flying off the shelves across the room, look at the land, what's been on the land, what's been close to the land. Secondly, and this is where the client interview plays such a huge role, could it be poltergeist activity brought on by the client's own physical stressors or mental stressors, or, you know, is it just that the client's just, well, batshit crazy? You know, without researching these things and having an idea, you have no clue. You're not going to be able to help anybody, and if anything, you may cause more harm than good, both for them and for yourself. So investigators, soon-to-be investigators, pay attention.
Yeah, and I do, and I'm sure if you listen to the playback, I stress that over and over and over and over. It can be a very dangerous situation to find yourself in. You could be harming yourself. You could be harming innocent people. You could be harming children. You could be harming animals. I've seen a client that had a basic, her grandma was in the house. I mean, of all people, that's all she had going on. Spooked her out, freaked her out. She didn't know what to expect, you know. She had no idea that it was just harmless old grandma stopping by to say hi, you know. And another team chose to go out onto her property and perform a ritual that they read online. And her animals started dropping dead.
Oh, wonderful.
That's always a good idea because everything online is absolutely true.
I mean, I've seen it. And so to stress the importance of education is really where I stand right now when it comes to speaking with other investigators in the field. I'm very silly. I laugh a lot. I crack a lot of bad jokes, especially about myself. But that is something to take very seriously. Before anybody takes that step with their team, they really do need to spend the time educating themselves. And if you're not capable of doing something like just counseling, basic counseling, find somebody that can and add them to your team. Or don't go into a client's house.
And that's one benefit where I have with my team. Of a five-member team, I have one member that is not qualified in anything psychologically or any other. I have two that are active law enforcement. I have one that is retired law enforcement, local level, then became federal, then became a hostage negotiator on the federal level. I think I've got the psychological aspect covered. Plus, as much as I've been through therapy, I've got it covered.
You're totally covered.
Just kidding.
And, well, you have it covered in a prosecutive way.
No, because they also have to take psychology courses to understand.
I know.
But
no, you know, I love everybody that you work with, and I that would endorse them hands down any day of the week, any time, no matter what.
And if I could convince Tara to drive up to Hanover Tavern Saturday.
Actually, Saturday I'm not really doing anything. You might be able to talk me into that one.
Uh-oh. Howard, if you can still hear, by all means, join in this conversation and see if we can talk her into that.
Howard has fun on Facebook with my Ouija board voice recorder question.
Yeah, I saw that. I love the one answer, though. You know, it's great for protecting the table, and I can set my glass on it, and it'll slide it right to my hand. I think he's got a brilliant idea. Well, so does Howard. But, yeah, you'll see a post from us very shortly. We're actually going to team up with Transcend Paranormal, which is a group of fantastic people up here. We have a meet and greet dinner at Hanover Tavern where, you know, you meet the investigative team that has done Hanover Tavern. I'm going along simply because he's running a couple of investigators short for the night, Howard as well, and we're just going along to help with the paranormal investigation type questions. As far as the location, I'm going to do some research so I know a little bit about what the hell I'm talking about if they ask me, but the majority of the location questions I'm going to have to field through them. But then they have, they're going to do four different areas there with kind of a social event type investigation, about 45 minutes in each area. I think it'll be a blast. I know Hanover Tavern is definitely one of the cooler places around here. So,
very cool. Talk about offline with you.
Yeah, I think it'd be a blast.
One of the pain in the ass things, though, and the numerous amounts of public event location stuff that I've done around here is, unless you have an extremely, extremely cooperative group, it's just not even worth, like, doing review or anything like that. Just kind of take it with a grain of salt. But if you have people that are specifically coming out there just to get spooked or whatever, they're not going to be quiet. They don't follow anything. It's basically an after Halloween horror house is what I've said, at least in this area. It might be totally different at this event, but
yeah, well, this one's more of, you know, I don't know. Well, I'll see how it goes. I really don't know what to expect. I do know that the group that is actually doing it, Transcend, is quite talented. They're very good at their research. Their historian, Ryan, is just he is sharp as a tack. I've got to give him kudos. And I don't think it's going to be one of the, you know, like, Halloween-type haunted attraction bullshits. But we'll find out.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that, like, they have people hired to jump out from corners and
No.
Just the patrons that attend tend to contaminate pretty much everything audio-wise you have.
I wouldn't trust any of the audio.
Yeah.
But that does make me think of something. That does bring a question to mind, Tara, with the amount of time that you've spent playing in this field and then having gone up to the exchange, helping out Angel there with the Trail of Terror and the Depot of Doom or Death. Do you actually still get a kick out of going through haunted attractions yourself?
Anymore? I mean, I think no. In all honesty, you got to be hard pressed to scare me. You have to be going out of your way to scare me anymore with the things I've seen or the things I've done, especially working and participating in a haunted house now. You'd be hard pressed to get a scare out of me. I think they'd be fun for a laugh, especially if I'm bringing some screaming girlfriends along, but no, not me anymore.
Tell me, working in an actual, like, fake, quote-unquote, fake haunted house, tell me that is not so much damn fun.
It is a lot of fun. You know, the only thing that I can honestly tell you, when we do the haunted house at the exchange is a legitimately active location. There are spirits there. And I do believe that the only downside I see to it is there are times those spirits, that's their home, and we are kind of irritating them a little bit. And that's, I mean, it's going to happen. That's the only downside I see to it. That can be a little depressing, I guess. You know, I don't like to know that I'm upsetting anyone, especially if, you know, I don't know, there's just something about it that kind of is a little sad if you know you've upset a spirit like that. But it's probably some of the best times I've ever had. True story, haunted trail. There were a good 10 or 12 of us working the haunted house, and some teenage girls came through who were apparently exceedingly scared. I mean, I didn't think we were that scary. I've been to Wisconsin and Iowa haunted houses where I had to sign releases before I walked in, but apparently they were. They hit and kicked two people out of all of us that were working there. Two people got hit. Ironically enough, and here's your laugh, the two people that did get kicked and hit were the only two cops in the building, the chief of police and his officer.
Way to go, Clay.
I love them to death for it. I had to go out afterwards. I got to give you boys props because you did not physically react to that one. Completely ironic, very, very funny. It was Clay and Jamie. Poor guys got kicked and punched, and true story. Only two people to get hit, both police officers.
Well,
has Clay ever talked to you about the apparition that he dealt with out there on his first call?
No.
Oh, my God. I know myself laughing at him.
I know Jamie a lot better than I know Clay. We talk at the events that I go and help Angel with, but outside of that, I don't really talk to him too much.
Well, next time you get up there and you actually get to talking with Clay, ask him about the intruder alarm, second floor in the piano room. And, oh, my God, I had tears rolling down my face laughing at this story. You want me to give a spoiler on it and tell you the story that he related to me, or do you just want to wait and catch it from him?
It's up to you.
Well, simply because it's such a damn good laugh.
I knew it was going to be a spoiler. Dennis wouldn't keep it.
Oh, I can't. I can't. It's so god-awful funny.
It is funny.
This was prior to him being chief. He grew up there, blah, blah, blah. He was just an officer. About 2 a.m., they get a phone call for a motion alarm inside. They meet the key holder, he and the other officer, start on the first floor. They went in through the back entrance on the ground level by the parking area. He said, as we're making our full sweep on ground level, we hear footsteps above us. And he said, now, when you go in, you'll understand this. From the second floor, the front entrance, the door immediately to your left, that room there, you'll know which room it is. It has a big piano right inside the door. He said, we heard the footsteps over in that side, so, you know, we kind of signaled each other, went around the common area, went up the stairway, made the turn to go back. There's a room beyond that room, but you can't get into it from the back side. The door is blocked off or whatever. He said, we stepped into that room. I panned my flashlight around. The other officer stepped off onto my left-hand side, pans his light. He said, my light aimed straight down that hallway. And at this point, we're standing about 3 feet from each other. And he just makes this look, just this, like, mean-ass growl look on his face. Gets right into my face. And he goes, this is what I saw coming at me full tilt. He said, I couldn't even get my weapon out of my holster fast enough, and this thing blew right through me and the other officer. He said, I looked a man in the face that close, like I'm looking at you right now, looked over my shoulder, and there's nobody there but a wall behind me 2 feet. I looked at the other officer, and we both looked back at that wall. We looked back at each other and went, I ain't seen a fucking thing. We're out of here. He was like, that was my first experience with the Exchange Hotel, and that was the first time I ever saw a full apparition. But what I looked at was literally a man a foot from my face, running at me at full speed. I couldn't even get my weapon drawn, and he ran right through the two of us. Both of us were pale as sheets, shaking like a leaf. We left. He said the only thing that was in our report was nothing found. He said we didn't put nothing seen, just nothing found.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that was,
no, I haven't
that
heard that story, but I will have to laugh at him for it. I did make sure the boys were okay, but after I realized they were, I did hysterically laugh at them. I'm not going to lie. They get into some interesting situations out there at the exchange.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that's like, you know, Graham that's on my team, you know, he's done several burglary calls for motion alarms and so forth in the school system in the jurisdiction that he's an officer. And they have a school officer, school security officer, that's all he does is go around to the various schools. He said that they had gotten a call to one of the high schools. They met the security officer. It was him, one other officer, and the school officer. He said, we went through the building. We heard footsteps in one of the rooms. We went into that room, and we're all three, I don't know, 10, 15 feet from the door. He said, the door slammed and the lights turned off. He said, in that order. He said, you know, immediately we thought somebody had run out, so we, you know, all three of us turned and looked and verified where the others are at. Then we ran for the door. He said, they should go out the door to the right, make it 15 or 20 feet, and we got the, you know, the draw gate across the hallway so nobody could have gone that way. Nobody could have gone to the left. It was, you know, a 50-foot run before you got to the stairway. And then it dawned on all of us that the door slammed and then the lights turned off. He said, we literally ran out of the room from whatever was in there, and we didn't even think about it until we ran out of the room thinking there was someone that left. And then as it dawned on the three of us, we're like, yeah, this is just a blank report of nothing found. So it's, you know,
it's entertaining.
I'm kind of jealous of some of the locations that they get, you know, called to for things like this. And I think if it were me and I were in uniform and going into all these places on calls like that, well, you guarantee yourself first thing I do is start a recorder and see what I find.
He'd be prepared for said situations. You know, actually, a bit back ago, before I got myself involved in so many things that my world is in complete chaos right now, I did have an interest in speaking to emergency workers, police, firemen, ambulance, because I've done that line of work myself. I was an EMT, and I was a police officer for a private police force, and so you get to kind of pick the brains, you know, of these people that you're working with. And I always thought it would be cool if there was somebody out there that would be willing to go to all of these medical workers and just basically document all of their paranormal experiences, because I would imagine that doing that field of work for a good length of time, you'd have to have seen or heard or been involved in something. One of the EMT workers I was speaking to said that he believed and still believes to this day that he saw the equivalent of a guardian angel, somebody in a very bad car accident, and some strange person just as clear as you or I, or just as real as you or I, walking over, laying his hand on the victim that was laying on the ground, and the next thing he knew, not only did that figure disappear into thin air, but the person sat up, said he'd never seen nothing like it before in his entire life, and the man swears to it. I believe that could have happened. It'd be a very cool thing, though, if somebody actually ran with that idea and did it.
Oh, most definitely. Oh. But it's kind of ironic that we have three bus runners on the air right now.
Yeah,
three what?
Both, right?
Three bus runners. Both Matt and I used to ride bus also. ambulance.
Oh, yeah. The EMT
where do you
work I did. The
where do you
e-
think CPR
I work...
came from?
You know what? I never actually thought about that. Son of a gun. Yeah, it makes sense now. I worked for a very, very large company, which when I left my job, I signed an agreement stating that I would not give out any information. So I cannot tell you the company's name. But they had their own private police force, and as the officers there, we also had to be EMT certified. Basically, the idea was because this was such a major national company, they did not want to have to call 911 if they did not have, they didn't want that kind of publicity on their property. So they did everything internally. And being an EMT and a police officer was my job.
Cool. I had a name ripped through me that I'll discuss with you off air, but I just heard it in the background as you were describing. So I'll talk to you about that one off air if you if you can. But yeah, I think that would be a fascinating idea to be able to talk to the law enforcement and first responders in general. And I guarantee, well, typically law enforcement or firefighters get to a scene much faster than most ambulance drivers, simply because they have to secure this. You know, the scene needs to be secured before they can do their job. So I'm thinking that law enforcement or firefighters would definitely be a cool profession to talk to regarding their experiences in the paranormal. So that's a good thought.
I
maybe we'll kick it between the two of us and see what we can come up with.
I think it's an awesome idea. I have never actually, I've ridden on ambulances back when I was doing nursing. But I've never been a bus runner like you guys have. My extent of EMT work was specialized to one property.
You're more of a nurse.
Pretty much. A glorified nurse, yeah.
No, if you're doing something medical, you're in the family.
Yeah.
You don't have to work trauma. You don't have to, be into that shit to be accepted is the main point of all that.
Well, thank you.
One of the funny things, now I bounced for several years. I had third degree black belt in Taekwondo. One of the funniest things I used to tell people that wanted to square off with me as I was asking them to leave was, I want you to know I am a third-degree black belt Taekwondo, and I'm a paramedic. So I can take you to the brink of death and bring your ass back or not. Do you want to continue with this? And the look that I would get at that was just total bewilderment. So, yeah, it was kind of neat to be able to do that.
I think the closest I ever came to that was actually looking at somebody that had an attitude, and I actually told them, my job is to save your life, not kiss your ass.
Yeah. Yeah, to serve and protect does not mean I am going to prepare you a meal and stand guard over you while you enjoy yourself.
But it would be a brilliant idea if somebody did that. That is, if these workers were able, I do know that certain law enforcement agencies, depending on where you go, and here in Virginia, let me rephrase that, here in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, it depends on what city you're in. Some of our officers are allowed to have Facebook or share personal experiences. Others are mandated by a contract that they can't have a Facebook, they can only use an email, they can't disclose anything. So it would be interesting to see what you're capable of pulling.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure, and that would definitely depend on the jurisdiction and you know, what department they're with. And I know a lot of them don't have Facebook just because they don't want to be found. You know, it's not because it's a departmental policy. They just don't want, you know, Joe Blow that they've locked up for whatever to be able to find anything on them. So it's a personal decision not to have Facebook.
But here it's mandatory.
No, I think it's definitely something we need to find out about. Do what, Matt?
Like, no, for here it's mandatory. If you're law enforcement, fire, FBI, like anything to do with law enforcement, fire, or paramedic, paramedic, you're okay, but no, fire department is allowed to have a Facebook if you don't list yourself as anything to do with the fire department.
As long as you don't signify your department, right, or affiliation.
Police, detectives, FBI, CIA, like they are not allowed to have it at all in the state of Illinois.
Interesting. That would make it a little trickier. You would have to do a face-to-face to talk with them then. But,
it'd be face, not Facebook, which is what I would actually prefer also, but...
A rare occurrence in society. That's what that is.
That's true.
Wait, what is actual physical social interaction? I don't understand this. Hashtag confused. Hashtag.
They all think I'm playing. Scared. You wait. It's coming.
I'm telling you, I got really strong damn duct tape.
I'm a lot stronger than I look. I am a tiny little thing, but I might be able to fight your duct tape off.
Poor Howard still got that. You know what the peanut hand over bald head is, right?
No idea, but it makes me laugh every time I see it.
It's from Jeff Dunham, where, you know who Jeff Dunham is, I'm sure.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, Peanut, his character.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Well, right over your head, just like that comment did, even though it made me giggle. I have no idea why it makes me laugh when he posts it, but it makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, probably because he talks about the bald head. But, you know, Howard's like us. He is more than willing to poke fun at himself and just doesn't give a shit. And I love him to death for it. All right. Well, this has definitely been entertaining. Do we have any valid points beyond here that we would like to bring up regarding the paranormal?
Yes, I do. Well, not point, but question. We've been talking about cleansings and all that kind of stuff. All right, Tara, I really do honestly want to know the answer to this question. When somebody comes in and does a smudging with sage or whatever the hell they use, that's not, to the best of your knowledge, I'm not holding you to it's the end-all, be-all of smudgings, but that's just basically a temporary Band-Aid, right?
I have a hard time answering that question. There are certain benefits that can come from it. If you're a very spiritual person, using it to connect with certain spirits, it can be very, very beneficial to you. When you're doing it in order to attempt to eliminate a spirit from a house, not only what I've been trained, and when I was trained, my mentor made some amazing points that made me believe her, and what I've seen for my own eyes, in going out to clients' houses, it can either be a temporary Band-Aid, like it kind of seems to get quiet for a day or two and then the crap just kind of hits the fan, but it can make things worse if it's not done properly. And 9 times out of 10, I can honestly tell you the people that are doing it have probably just read some article on Facebook and is trying to go out and do it. But the way my mentor explained it to me was beautiful. She said people that perform smudgings, they say start in the middle of the room and go through the house. She said, when you've seen this happen for yourself, when you've watched somebody do it, did you see them open all their doors and their windows? Well, no. Why would they do that? Well, if you're asking a spirit to leave a house and you're chasing them out with the smoke from the sage, where are you chasing them to? Well, that's
valid point.
A valid point. Where the hell are you chasing them to? And she said, then in addition to that, she said, I don't know about you, but I know what I've seen when she watches videos on YouTube or somebody posts something online or maybe on a few shows you might have seen on TV. Do you see the people walking into the corners of the room? Mind you, doors and windows are open at this time and basically going through the entire area or every square inch of the building. Well, no, I guess I, now that you say it, I haven't seen them do that because I haven't. She said, well, if you're just chasing them away with smoke, if the smoke doesn't go all the way into the corner of the room or maybe it's not all the way up against the wall, where are they going? Huh. Well, again, I guess that's a valid point. So the way she explained it to me was beautiful. It worked for me. It works for my mind and the way my mind works. I don't personally use it very often. I will use it if it is requested, but it's not something I use to cleanse a house in that aspect, no. If somebody asks me to come in and do a cleansing, that's not what I'm bringing into their home. I do believe it's done wrong most of the time, and I think the way my mentor explained it to me makes a lot of sense. You're just kind of chasing them around the house. And in that aspect, if you're just chasing them around the house and you're demanding that they leave, you're probably pissing them off too.
Well, because I've always used the reference too of I can walk around with a skunk's tail as a trigger and spray whatever in the area with something that doesn't smell all that pleasant, which the sage isn't a bad smell, but no, but I look at it, and who decided back in the day that sage, besides the Native Americans, but who decided that sage was something that spirits hate? And this is just my personal thought on somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, but when you cleanse a house with sage, like, for example, you watch on, My Ghost Story or anything like that, where they give the homeowner sage and say, well, if you burn this, it's going to eliminate the spirit. Well, if you think about that as a whole, what is it actually truly, honestly doing? You're burning something that focuses on the Native American religion, but if you don't have any Native American blood in you and you don't know a shaman or you don't know where you got it from, what is that truly doing? It's only giving the homeowner peace of mind and empowering them as people to say, it's gone now.
I've done a little bit of research on sage, and it can actually date back all the way to when man was really were, as far as they know, on the earth. Smoke and fire are very, very cleansing in a natural area. Kills bacteria. It has kept insects away. They use this for very typical basic things, basically, the smoke and the fire. The Native Americans burned strong-smelling substances, not necessarily always sage, but a strong-smelling substance, to eliminate negative energies that kind of stem from that belief of cleansing the area, keeping the insects or the bad away, predators, things like that. To follow it up, Austrian people, if I'm not mistaken, actually burn eucalyptus, and the Chinese burn things like sandalwood. So it really depends on what culture you're going into, because if you think about it, depending on what culture you're speaking about, some cultures actually use sandalwood and eucalyptus to draw spirits in while others are chasing them out, and the same applies to sage, but it all stems from the basic use of it, or burning and fire is to keep things away, to kill bacteria, to cleanse the area. I'm a history nerd, sorry.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I'm saying is you're absolutely 100% right. And if you go into somewhere or into a culture that you don't recognize, that's where education comes in. But yeah, I've just always had a problem with, you know, the random person burning sage in their house, even if they followed everything. If there was a person who is the end-all and be-all of exhuming paranormal activity from a house, and they had a video on YouTube, but there's still not the full education behind that. And I just said, you know, just because you get a clump of sage and you set it on fire in your house, and then you smoke out your house, well, what are you left with? You're left with a smoked out house. And the personal belief behind that on a psychological level is you fix the problem. That doesn't mean you fix the problem. It's just you personally feel that you fix the problem. The problem is still there.
You just put a Band-Aid over it. I see what you're saying.
Exactly.
And I do believe that more often than not, that's exactly what's happening, especially because these rituals, regardless of which ritual you're trying, are not being performed from an educated viewpoint. Take the time to go through the spiritual training. Not only is it rewarding for your soul, but you can really help other people instead of cause more harm. You're performing these rituals. You don't fully understand what you're doing. In some cases, animals drop dead, mom and dad get sick, all of a sudden baby's sick, you have no idea what the hell's going on. In other cases, all right, well, that's cool, my house has been really quiet for the past 24 hours, and then, oh my God, stuff is flying off my counter. I mean, if you piss me off in real life, you're going to get a reaction out of me. I'm just saying. So I would have to imagine that considering spirits are human beings, that if you piss them off, you're probably going to get a negative reaction.
Well, that's why earlier when I was talking about how I've changed my whole line of questioning and EVPs and all that stuff, I walk into a place with the knowledge of research of the location, people who live there, you know, and then do kind of a profile of what's going on in the house after talking to the person or even just the location, whatever, and comparing it to what I've learned and what I know about it. And then I will directly address things personally, walk in there like, oh, so John Smith, I know you used to be here. like what's, you know, pretty much what's going on, like why are you still here? Not, is there anybody here that wants to talk to us? Because then it's so general, it's like, oh, well, yeah, the light in the dark room is so bright. It's like, oh, yeah, I want to talk. Well, no, I don't want to talk to you right now. I want to talk to people directly associated with what's going on. And get nothing or get something different. And I've actually gotten a few EVPs like that comes across, no, he's not here, or she's not here, or whatever the case may be. But it's more direct responses to questions than, is anybody here who wants to talk to us? Yes. Oh, did you hear that? No, shut up with that shit. But no, I try and generalize everything into relevance as opposed to just who the hell knows. Oh, that's just personally how.
Oh, no, I was listening. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
I'm still kind of stuck on the fact that he pulled John Smith, are you here with us? Because I was just at Henricus today, so the irony, like, supposedly one of the buildings that I was in, which, I mean, it's a mock-up of that time frame from the 1611 period, but it was one of the buildings that, you know, Captain John Smith was supposedly in, and it's one of the strongest EVPs I've ever got came out of that building. But we have so many layers of history on that land, there's no way to know who in the hell it is. And until I can get a strong enough EVP that actually gives up a name, you know, there's no telling what the hell entity actually gave me that EVP. But the fact that you pulled up, you know, said John Smith, just the irony of that.
Well, it's the same. John Smith is the same thing as saying John Doe.
Yeah.
So I don't like using John Doe because of the fact that I've had to call so many people who were dead when I picked them up as John Doe.
Yeah, whereas
until
they're
properly identified, it's to me it's a taboo thing. So that's how John Smith gets his name.
Okay. Oh, man. Well, I am going to go take my meds and see if I can get this snot box I have to open up so I can breathe again.
Thank you again for having me, you guys. I will talk to you offline. I, too, am going to get off the phone and let it charge. but thank you for having me on.
I definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you're more than welcome. Anytime you want, Tara, just the phone number never changes. We're on Monday nights and Wednesday nights. Call in anytime.
Awesome.
It doesn't matter who our guest is. You're more than welcome to join us, even just kind of out of the blue.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, you guys.
No problem, Tara. You have a good night, dear.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks
Bye.
Again for joining us, darling. I'll talk to you probably tomorrow. Have a great night.
I'm sorry.
What? Sorry for what?
Oh, just you saying that I'll probably talk to you tomorrow.
Oh.
Saying sorry.
Oh. Oh, to her.
I'll probably
I
talk
should.
To you tomorrow, too. So.
Yeah, probably. But, yeah, I mean, I think she's got some fantastic points. And like I told her, you know, I absolutely love having intelligent conversations with those that have taken the time to educate themselves. And that's why you and I have such long, lengthy conversations. You know, it's a matter of once you've taken the time to educate yourself and you know what you're talking about, the conversation can go in a thousand different paths. And
What kind of education do you think I have?
I know you got 24 years. I mean, you did the 12th grade twice, right? Or did you get through the 6th grade four times?
That would be, I'm 32. So, what's 12th grade?
Well, that's the one after the 10th. Oh, wait, no, that was for me because I just got skipped through the 11th. All right, brother. Let's go ahead and close this one out. I think it's been a phenomenal episode. We have 4 minutes, I believe, before Blog Talk will kick us out anyway.
Yeah, just play a song and... Well, real quick, while you're looking for a song to play us out, I'm going to have, and it's going to be soon, maybe, it depends if Chris Deadman's going to be back on Monday, that if he's going to be, maybe Wednesday, I'm going to have the members of a wolf sanctuary in Colorado on.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So we can talk about what they do, preservation, the wolf families that are there. Yeah, dude, I am really, really excited to have them on.
Well, fantastic. That sounds like it'll be good. Now, I don't know a whole lot about wolves and so forth, but I'll definitely enjoy the edutainment, I'm sure. But,
well, you know about alpha, beta, all that stuff. But, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. We'll get into it next week, brother.
Yeah, for
sure. Don't be a spoiler. But, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us again tonight. This has been another awesome episode of Full Spectrum Radio. With CPR Matt and CPR Dennis. Catch us on Facebook at CPR Matt and CPR Dennis, also on Twitter at the same. You can find us on Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook and the .com. And I'm going to give you a little bit of exit music here. Thanks again for joining us, and y'all stay safe out there.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Conviction. I'm just one of those ghosts.